So hello there, faithful listener, and a very warm welcome to this Small Voice Extra podcast. I'm Holly.
And I'm Darren.
And we are delighted to be joined by the Reverend Steve Stockman. Steve, would you like to introduce yourself?
Oh my goodness.
You'll do a much better job of it than I will.
I'm not sure about that. Yeah, I'm Steve Stockman. I'm minister in Belfast for in your Queen's University in a menagerie of people in a community called Fitzroy. We go under the name Presbyterian, but it's hard to find a Presbyterian there. And I've got various other things. I co-chair the Four Corners Festival, which tries to take people across the four corners of Belfast and break down not only geographical, denominational barriers, but racist barriers, all kinds of barriers. And I blog on Substack, Steve Stockman, Soul Surmise. And yeah, I'm married with two kids, one getting married in a month's time. Very scary and very exciting. And very excited, obviously, that you two are releasing music again.
Yes, and thanks for mentioning you two right up front, Stephen. We'll come to your particular expertise in just a second. Faithful listeners will remember that back in March, Holly and I in our podcast talked about, with great excitement, about Days of Ash, the entirely unexpected EP which you two dropped on Ash Wednesday. And I remember we were chatting about maybe getting some specialist input into that, and Holly said to me, I know someone who knows U2's music really, really well. And so, Steve, we tried to get you on that podcast, yeah. But sadly, events conspired and it just wasn't possible. And it's funny because I seem to recall that we said, oh, well, maybe next time. And lo and behold, 40 days later, on Good Friday, faithful listeners may be aware, U2 dropped another entirely unexpected EP, which is called Easter Lily. And we'll come to that in a moment. And Steve, I'll admit to doing a wee bit of research, and I've been reading your blog, which you mentioned, Soul Surmise, is great. You know, fabulous, wide variety of music. You're a man who loves his music. But I did see, I think when I looked about you online, there was a sort of joke that you know U2 better than U2 do, or you know things about Bono that he doesn't know. So do you want to explain a little bit about your history with the band?
That's in itself a long podcast, but I was 19, quite new to following Jesus, and I suppose looking for those edgy bands. There was another band called After the Fire at the time that had been in the Old Grey Whistle Test, and we thought that was amazing. And then somebody mentioned U2, and I had a few record tokens, and I took a chance on this album called October, because it was October and it was my birthday. And I think I remember, it's iconic in my mind, but what did this actually happen? But I think I do remember just setting the stylus down on the 12-inch vinyl of October, and when Gloria kicked in, my life changed in so many ways. And then later, much, much later, I got the opportunity to write what I thought at the time, at the start of the new millennium, was a kind of an apologetic to U2. They weren't keen in expressing their faith very outwardly in those days, and so I got so fed up with people not getting the depth of the lyrics spiritually that I said to my wife one weekend, somebody should write a book. And then honestly, this American publisher came in and asked me if I was interested in writing a book, and I said maybe U2, and they said that's what we're thinking too. So So Walk On came out about 25 years ago, and that's what puts you foolishly. What you learn about this, guys, is that when you write a book, people say you're an expert, and then you realise that every book you read, if he or she is as big an expert as you, they're not really an expert at all. But you get that label. And it means that when something drops, a new EP, that there's so many people on asking my opinion. So I almost have to take a few days off just to listen to you two. So, so up to date, you know, used to be Sky TV would ring me for my opinion on you two. I mean, it's madness, and it is madness. I mean, I know a good bit about the band, but there's people out there who know more.
Yeah.
But I got the opportunity to write the book for so many of us that could have written it.
As a
fan of you two, which I think is probably fair if you're not going to claim expert, as a fan and as a minister, obviously Darren and I have had the opportunity to chat to each other about Days of Ash. How did it feel whenever they probably during quite a busy week for you suddenly dropped Days of Ash as a as an EP.
I think the interesting thing about Days of Ash is you don't bring albums out on a Wednesday because they don't start counting the charts until Friday. And I used to be very critical of U2 because I thought they wanted to be the best band in the world, but foolishly they also wanted to be the best selling band in the world. Mm-hmm. And for many, many years they were able to do that. But I don't think we got that album that people talked about called Songs of Ascent. I think we have got it now over various projects, but I don't think we got it because it might not have sold. Well, you don't bring an album out on a Wednesday or actually on Good Friday.
No.
If you want to reach the top of the charts. But so these albums were, or these EPs were, we didn't know about the sack one. There was something. And Days of Ash, well, we know that Lent starts that day and we know that there's an intentionality about that title on that day. So, and then over the last, 15 years, Bono particularly has been very vocal about his faith. They don't hide that anymore, but this was quite a major use of faith to, at the end of the day, they bookended Easter with Ash Wednesday and Good Friday. Amazing.
And when Holly and I chatted about Days of Ash, our sense had been that we maybe foolishly had not written off U2, but we'd kind of thought, okay, they're there, they're doing what they do. If you asked me for my favourite U2 albums, I'd be reaching back a bit. I'd be saying it's nice that they're there. They're kind of, they're not quite a legacy band just doing the old hits. But I'll confess, I was really surprised by just how immediate and kind of alive the music was. I thought, I'm not sure I've heard the guitar sound so good, the drum sounded, the bass, just it's like everyone seemed to be absolutely on it. For you, was it would you look at Days of Ash and say, wow, this was a real upping their game? Or you might be such a fan, you say, look, I just love it all.
No, I was a bit like yourself. I wasn't sure whether I'd like the next U2 album or not. My jury was out. Now, that wasn't the case with anything up until now.
Yeah.
I was off to buy. I bought most U2 albums at midnight on a Sunday night because stores here opened to let us do that. I wouldn't have been rushing at 12 o'clock on a Sunday night to buy the next one. And so I was surprised. I think the thing that surprised me is maybe again Easter Lily, because Days of Ash seemed to be, Springsteen had made the statement in Days of Minnesota, yes, the Minnesota song, Streets of Minnesota, and then suddenly U2 had done the same. And I thought, this is for the time, this is for the wars that are going on, for some message of hope into the midst of that, a protest into the midst of that. And boy, did they protest it. It really has, as you say, that first, American Obituary, it's this punky, kind of energetic anger. And that took us back, certainly, in U2 music. But that's what I thought we're onto here. It's something for the moment. Easter Lily's a different beast. So they're making all this music and suddenly they're able to drop 12 songs. And from what they say, folks, we might be back here, if you invite me, later in the year to talk about an album. This is not the album. It's quite extraordinary. So I was excited that they'd made a statement, and I'm used to them making statements, and I'm always wonderfully excited when they make statements, and that faith in Jesus and some sort of alternative kingdom to the one we have is at the centre of what they're doing. And certainly on these two records, I still call them, they're doing that. It's not protest. I came to faith because I loved the Beatles, but I didn't think the Beatles had any, they were saying, asking good questions, but they didn't have answers. Mm-hmm. And U2 seemed to point us to somebody with an otherness, a transcendence, that have a robust answer to the questions as well. And that's what I see across these two EPs.
So I guess that does bring us neatly to Easter Lily, doesn't it? And I certainly wasn't expecting anything more from you two at the end of Lent, and we're now we're so solidly into Easter now. I personally have lost track of the number of times that I've listened to this EP, which is unusual for me. With something new, I'm a repeat listener. I will repeatedly listen to favourite albums from the past. It's rare that something else comes into rotation. So I guess that probably betrays what I think of Easter Lily, which is I loved it the first time I listened to it, but it's also a grower. I think it stands up to repeat listening. Darren, Steve, what do you think?
Darren.
Yeah, I blogged about this on Substack because I was going for a shower, and normally what I do, it's really a pathetic kind of wanting to be efficient in my use of time. So I think I'll listen to a podcast, and I just listen to it through my tinny speaker on my phone, which is, you know, the other end of the bathroom. And I was looking through various political podcasts, thinking what I might listen to. And then this was on Good Friday, and, you know, in the afternoon, and I suddenly looked and realised that there was this U2 album. And I put it on, and I really liked the first track. I mean, I am told, having read, that it's actually The Edge that sings it. But
you don't notice, do you, though?
I did not notice that at all. No. And then, you know, if you'd asked me at the time, I would have thought, oh, you know what, I really like some of these songs, but I'm not sure it's grabbed me as much as Days of Ash. But I would completely agree with you, Holly, that it is a grower. And particularly, you know, I think as I was, you know, coming to the end of the shower, drying myself off, not to get too specific, I thought, blimey, Bono's singing Kyrie Eleison. And it's like we're back in the days of Gloria. It's got a real callback to it. And I just think, and then of course it closes with a song that sounds such a very simple title, Coexist, I Will Bless the Lord at All Times, but there's a question mark.
Oh, what that question mark's about.
And that's doing a lot of heavy lifting. And I think I love that they are both celebrating faith and acknowledging that we are in troubled times in terms of conflict, and, you know, maybe with people using faith. But that's the opinion of someone who's not written a book about you too. So over to you, Steve.
No, well, I didn't hit it first time. And my daughter said to me around the Easter weekend, she said, I'm not sure. And I said, I think it might be a grower. And then we went off for a week to the coast, and I listened to it a lot. And I just went, oh, this is a grower. This is really, really great. And I find myself repeating some of the phrases. Bono is on it. He's got some great lyrical, lines in there. That magpie way he drops a couple of lines into different songs in different places. The question mark at the end of Coexist, I Will Bless the Lord at All the Times, question mark, close the brackets. That means the question mark is over, I Will Bless the Lord at All Times. That is, oh my goodness, we could talk about that one for a long time, and I have no answer to that yet. Because the thing about you two is you want to hear it live to see how they, what old song do they put around that, and what kind of blend, what's the playlist at that point? And we might not even hear any of these songs live if there's another album coming out at the end of the year. But just the depth of spirituality, and Darren, with you on the Took Me Back to Gloria. You know, there's Gloria, there's Yahweh, you know, there's almost now you could put out the worship album. There are 12 good worship songs across the canon that are so clearly. But it took me back to that, and I thought, this is fascinating that the whole band are still interested in laying this one out.
Yahweh was my Gloria, because when How to Dismantle an Atomic Bomb came out. And I was, young. I was at, you'll know what I'm talking about, Steve, but no listener or Darren will know what I'm talking about. But I was doing Street Reach, which is after there's a festival in Belfast called Summer Madness. We were going out to do sort of cross-community work afterwards. And the person who was leading my small group used the lyrics for Yahweh as like a morning devotion before we went out before I went to St. Peter's Cathedral in Belfast to do some work on the Falls Road.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's it's taking us right back. But that was the song that got me into U2 as a band that had something to say of something that was relevant to me as a young, then probably would have identified as an evangelical Christian. And U2 were really helpful for me as I moved on a faith journey that was perhaps a little bit more progressive. To me, this is like manna from heaven that there is a...
Well, it's interesting, I saw the Vertigo tour. I went on sabbatical in Vancouver, and I arrived. I had a day, and then there was they started that tour in Vancouver, and I got tickets for the first two nights because I was finishing the update of Walk On. And I got Gloria, And my wife went the next night and she got Yahweh, and we felt we had both. So there you are, Holly. I got Gloria, she got Yahweh, and we've covered.
Absolutely.
But that's what these songs feel like. They feel like it, not only lyrically, but they feel that kind of worshipful thing.
Mm. I mean, lyrically, there's stuff on here that you don't see often. There's a line on Resurrection Song, you can go to hell together until death dies too.
Oh, yes.
And that said more than most Easter sermons I've heard.
Yeah, yeah.
You speak to the part of me that cannot spark you. I can't see you, but I know you're there. But even on a smaller level, the first song is a tribute to a collaborator, Henrietta Halvilner. And it almost ends with, did you know he is close to God who makes his old friends laugh? Statement of faith, that's a thinker for me as well.
Yeah, well, we haven't mentioned Richard Rohr in the midst of this. The mystical writer who I know that Bono's been reading for 20 years maybe now, and it comes out in both. I mean, I know that we have, you know,
The Tears of Things.
Tears of Things is from the very title of his book, but even in this album, I think, that's got to be Richard Rohr coming in, because there's a mystical side that you two always had, but I think they now know what a mystic is, if you know what I mean. That I think when they were singing mystical stuff before, I think anybody really was going down that road, and now we have a few mystics that can help them to really fulfill that, and I think that's coming out on certain Easter Lily particularly.
And do you have an explanation, if you like, as to why they are deciding to be a bit more unapologetic, if you like, about matters of faith, or do you think it's just not as big a deal as it used to be? Or what's your take on that?
I think when they come out of the blocks, they had no questions about it, and then they discovered, forgive me, but they discovered the white supremacist America in 1983 that we now see across our news, and they didn't want anything to do with that. And I think at that stage, Martin Luther King was very important. They saw that exhibition, they started thinking about the work of Martin Luther King Jr., and that helped them to live at the edge, that helped them to find a place on the boundaries where they could kind of continue faith, but they wanted still to be quite coy about it because of what people, the perceptions that people have of faith. And I think when you get to, I'm old enough to be in the band, and when you get to my, I mean, and I've probably a year and a half before retirement, I'm saying things I didn't say 20 years ago. Because you've nothing to lose now. You're not trying to be cool anymore. You're not trying to win Holly over to listen to what you're trying to say at some event you're at. You're just trying to tell the truth more. And I think they got to a point where they just said, look, there's no point in hiding this any longer. We're going to talk about it. And at least Bono did. I don't know how the rest of them feel about that. But, you know, Edge, they're all pretty open about it. Bono, obviously, more than others. And it's just always been there.
Yeah, because, I mean, generally speaking, we talked in the podcast that we did in March, you know, we talked about, you know, is this the protest song coming back? And I am struck that, for example, I was in America before the US elections, and I was in America the day that Taylor Swift kind of did a kind of message about, you know, called herself a cat lady and basically said that she would be voting for Kamala Harris. It's a different world now in America, and I am conscious that a lot of artists, and I guess younger artists, are being incredibly careful in what they say. You know, even the throwaway jokey comments that you would, of course you would make about the president at Oscar ceremonies and music. Everyone is on their best behaviour now. So yeah, maybe it is the old folk that need to...
Yeah, Springsteen, yeah. You too. Amy Grant, Yasker's Farm. What a song that she's bringing out at this stage of her life. Maybe one of the best songs she's ever released. And again, very powerfully prophetic. So you could be right on that one. I think Brandi Carlile might draw out that younger audience as well, because she's just so omnipresent and so incredibly wonderful. And I think she's beginning to speak, and that might help more come behind her.
Yeah. So we wait for the younger prophets to find their voice, or to find a way around their record labels.
Oh yeah, and we could talk about music all day. I know that we could. I saw Brandy last year. I'm seeing her again this year. What an artist she is. Oh, so yeah. I mean, there is hope for the future, I think.
Yeah, she's a great human being.
Yeah. Well, listen, Steve, it's been great to catch up with you. It's been great to meet you for the first time. Hopefully not the last.
Let's do it again, guys. You know, listen, too short.
We don't pay as much as Sky TV, though I suspect I know exactly how much Sky TV paid you.
Nothing.
It was hee-haw. But it's been really lovely to catch up. And as you say, who knows when the next... the next thing we're waiting for is for a full album, we think, sometime this year.
Well, you have to get up every morning and just check whether it's there.
absolutely. And our usual recommendation to, if you're streaming music and you love it, please buy it. This is how C bands, when they're touring, buy music. This is how we support these amazing artists to continue to do what they do.
And Steve, we'll put links to your Substack.
Thank you.
And also, I mean, can people still buy the book, or is it hard?
Yeah, it's available. I think you could probably get it for a penny somewhere on Amazon, or you know, I find it in bookshops and try to buy it, and then the person behind the counter finds out it's mine, and I end up signing it for them. Yeah. That's happened to me a couple of times recently. So you can get it cheap.
Grand. You're a man blessedly unworried about your retirement pot there, Steve. It's been lovely to meet you. Thanks so much.
Absolute pleasure, Steve. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
You've enjoyed this, faithful listener.
I have.
We'll be back.
Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye.